Today is Tuesday, March 26, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Antros. An appeals court gives a ruling in the Trump case. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget, if you haven't yet, subscribe, leave a rating. If you could do it quickly and just get it out of the way, I won't have to keep saying it every day, and then we'd all be happy. But go ahead and do that. Subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We'd love to hear from you. Getting through the news of the cray here each and every weekday morning, bright and early. And joining me on this Tuesday edition of the podcast, as always, Madison Seals, Trey Gomes Phillips. Some interesting ones today, guys, including Chick-fil-A abandoning a major pledge.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, Chick-fil-A is like, okay, well, I am obsessed with Chick-fil-A, but I feel like most of us are obsessed with Chick-fil-A. So whenever they make an announcement, it's world news, not just national news, world news.
Yes, definitely Christian news. That's for sure.
Yes.
Right. As I was there yesterday. So looking forward to seeing what that's all about. On the main thing, we're looking at revival on the border, talking to preacher Tony Suarez, who's on a mission to turn the conversation back to the spiritual. So all that and more coming up on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, including DC Debrief with John Stolness. That's our Friday podcast once a week, rounding up the happenings in DC, and Newsmakers with Billy, full-length interview each and every weekday. So make sure you could check all those out. You can do so in the description of this podcast and follow those podcasts through those links. All right, it's time to head on over here to the news in 90 seconds. A New York appeals court, just hours before the deadline, reduced former President Trump's bond from a whopping $454 million, still down to a pretty significant sum, but a lot less at $175 million. Trump has announced his intention to comply with the decision and post the $175 million bond. And compliance with this new deadline would prevent New York Attorney General Letitia James from seizing Trump's assets as he appeals Judge Arthur Engoron's judgment. Trump posted on Truth Social saying, "I did nothing wrong, and New York should never be put in a position like this again. Businesses are fleeing, violent crime is flourishing, and it is very important that this be resolved in its totality as soon as possible. Thank you," he said. And to put that $450 million bond in perspective, by the way, scammer Sam Bankman-Fried's alleged $32 billion crypto scheme was one of the largest financial frauds in U.S. history, and his bond was $250 million, and that was a lot bigger even than Bernie Madoff's bond, which was only $10 million, and he had a $65 billion Ponzi scheme. And U.S. leaders are very concerned with the possibility that a terrorist massacre like what happened in Russia could happen here in the U.S. Florida Senator Marco Rubio and others told ABC's This Week they'll do it here in the homeland. Those are just some of today's top stories. You can check out more over at cbnnews.com. And just a couple more notes, guys, here before we get reaction on the border situation. Obviously, that big terrorist attack in Russia, and you just immediately think about how porous our borders here are in America, especially the southern border, and what could happen here? Who's getting in here? And that has people worried, including Marco Rubio, who said that. They'll do it here in the homeland. He said, "I think we should be very concerned, as the FBI director confirmed to me, that there's a wing there is trafficking a network that out there that specializes in moving people. They do it for profit, moving people and migrants around the world, including across our southern border, who have links to ISIS." And the head of U.S. Border Patrol, Jason Owens, was also asked about this on CBS. And he said, if he's concerned, he said, "Absolutely, you ask any law enforcement officer, especially somebody that works in border security, and this is what keeps us up at night." So I talked about this, guys, with Chuck Holton over the weekend when we were talking about this terrorist attack and responding to everything that was happening there. And that was one of the concerns that came up. We see the porous border, and now we see what ISIS, apparently they're still around. They're not defeated. They're out there claiming responsibilities for these attacks. And so it makes a lot of people worried about our border being so porous.
Yeah, it's not just conspiracy anymore. I mean, like you said, the the porous border is very obvious at this point. And just earlier this month, a Lebanese migrant was caught sneaking over the border and admitted that he's a member of Hezbollah and he'd planned to go to New York and make a bomb. And he later joked about it and said he was just kidding. But I mean, that's what his training had included, was to kill anybody who's not Muslim. And his plan was to come across the border, and he was able to get that far. So if he hadn't been caught, what's to stop him from continuing on with his plan? And, you know, that's just one example of many who probably go unseen or uncaught, and who knows what's going on behind the scenes as we speak.
I think what's so frustrating about this is the left and the right, I don't care what party you belong to, it seems more often than not, politicians are just kind of using this as a political football to lob back and forth about how evil and bad the other side is, when this is an actual threat. Like, this isn't something we're just talking about abstractly. It's possible that you know, a terrorist attack could very well happen. There's not really any screening taking place at our border right now because we're too concerned about offending people's political sensibilities or, you know, wanting to win a vote in the ballot box, when the reality is, unfortunately, I mean, nobody likes this, but ultimately we're going to have to make a decision, and that decision is going to negatively impact some people. But our lawmakers have a responsibility to protect our national sovereignty. And part of that is closing off, protecting, figuring out some way to solidify the border. And that's going to, you know, the answer is going to be uncomfortable, but there needs to be an answer.
I think it's also, you know, as we talk about the responsibility to keep our country safe, that's also for the sake of people who are coming in legally and seeking shelter in the U.S. legally.
Totally.
You know, if we just let our country become a place where anybody can come in, even those with bad intentions who want to destroy it, then what's the point in everybody who's coming over seeking shelter and seeking the opportunities that we have here in the U.S.? We're also protecting it for those people.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more tragic to me than when you read about somebody who risked everything to get over here from some horrible place. They come in the right way, and then they die some other way because, you know, you have a bunch of unvetted migrants who've come in, and some of them commit crimes, and it's just so tragic. And to your point, I mean, you hear a lot of in the Christian circles to talk about, hey, we need to be compassionate to people who are coming over here. And it's interesting because that compassion only seems to take one route, which is just let everyone in. That's the only compassionate thing. Well, there are other compassionate angles to this. First of all, not encouraging people to take a life-threatening journey across the jungles of Central America to try to get here through human traffickers, who many times are from the cartel. That's not very loving and compassionate to try to send somebody who may be in a bad situation, but trying to send them through that and encouraging them, saying, yeah, come on, we'll welcome everyone. Bring it all on. That's not very welcoming. You see what happens to kids and parents. They get separated. They get killed. They get attacked. They get assaulted. All those sorts of things. And then to your point, Madison, you have then less safety here in America. How's that being compassionate to our neighbors here in America who may be victims of these crimes? Like we saw with Lake and Riley, it's just really, it should be a more holistic conversation, and people are trying to boil it down into sound bites.
Yeah. Yeah. And you also hear, you know, the comments about just letting people through to be kind and gracious. We hear that from some, not all, who have security teams around them, or who have, you know, live in a gated community or fly very securely. And, you know, we hear that from people who don't exactly live out the same values that they're preaching.
Yeah, indeed. Well, this is certainly an issue that's going to be, it's risen up to near the top, if not the top issue, aside from perhaps the economy, in this election cycle in 2024. So we'll certainly continue to report on that and give you all the updates on that front. So, all right, we're going to go over now to our focus story. And Chick-fil-A is making a big change to its food. I mean, Trey, I'm thinking the first phrase that comes to my mind is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So what is happening here at Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, this is other, like I said, super important news that we have to talk about. What is Chick-fil-A doing? So obviously Chick-fil-A is a Christian-owned company. We've talked a lot about that, but there's nothing nothing in jeopardy when it comes to their faith. So you can rest easy that it has no pledges that have to do with the faith of the owners of Chick-fil-A. But they did announce this past week that they are doing away with their no antibiotics ever rule in their chicken. So now some people on social media have been kind of upset because Chick-fil-A has said that they're altering their position from no antibiotics ever in their chicken to no antibiotics important to human medicine in their chicken. So the reason that's kind of a big deal is because in 2014, they were kind of a leading restaurant chain, fast food chain at the time, when they said that they were promising to never ever use any or purchase any chicken that had any antibiotics in it at all. They announced that in 2014, and you know, through the process of all of their different franchisee owners, by 2019 they were completely antibiotic free in their chicken, and now they're reversing that. Kind of
very interesting. Is any other company or food chain sort of doing the same thing? Is what's going on there?
Yeah, so there are a couple other companies that have done the same thing. Obviously, a huge brand that most people who shop at the grocery store will be familiar with seeing is Tyson. They're a big food processing brand. They announced similarly, actually, last summer that they were doing away with the no antibiotics ever pledge, and they're going to have antibiotics now. Similar to what Chick-fil-A has said, is they're going to be very selective in where they purchase their meats from. So it'll only be antibiotics that are used explicitly for animals. So people might be wondering why does this matter? The reason that it matters is because historically, certain farmers have used antibiotics that are the same antibiotics we would use in humans. When we have an illness similar to what maybe an animal would get, we would be treated with the same antibiotics, obviously a different dosage and all that, but it would be the same chemical makeup in the human antibiotic and the animal antibiotic. Over time, if we're consuming food that has the same medications in it, our immune systems will just get used to having those medications in or those chemicals in our systems. And then when a doctor gives you an antibiotic for an illness, the medicine doesn't really impact us the same way because we've built up an immunity to that medication. So that's the reason that it's kind of an interesting decision. But like I said, Chick-fil-A has said that they're specifically only going to be sourcing their meats from places where the farmers are giving antibiotics that are only for animals, no chemicals that would be ingested by humans for treatment with illness.
This is a pretty big change. And was there any outside pressure or something like that? What motivated them to actually go through with this change and this kind of reversal?
Yeah, I think something too that's interesting is we're living in a day and age, I think, with social media and internet, everybody kind of feels like they're a genius when it comes to what they should and shouldn't eat. And it is good to be, I'm kind of making fun of it, but it is good to be aware of what chemicals and ingredients you're taking into your body. But right now you could go and read any blog that will tell you that everything you possibly eat is terrible for you, that you need to be only eating organic, all of this stuff. And some of that is good. But it's interesting that in an age when so many people are hyper aware of that stuff, that there are companies making decisions like this, because it ends up getting in headlines and we end up talking about it like we're talking about it now. But really the impetus for this was over the last season or two, farmers have been dealing with a flu that really only animals are impacted by. And they have, even these farmers who run organic farms, who have always promised to be antibiotic free, similar to Chick-fil-A, Tyson, whatever, they've been forced to give medications to their animals, because otherwise these flus were going through the entire farms and they were killing off many of the animals. So they were forced to make this decision, and now that's kind of trickling down the chain. And now places like Tyson, Chick-fil-A are being forced to say, all right, well, there's no other place that we can source our chicken, because pretty much all of the big players in this industry are now giving specific antibiotics. So they've had to kind of alter their promises when it comes to food with or without antibiotics in it.
So as someone who consumes a fair amount of Chick-fil-A and Chick-fil-A-like type foods. I may or may not be a bit of a fast food connoisseur. My general policy on stuff like this, and this is probably not a good policy, and I'm not a doctor, so I'm not recommending this to anyone, but is if it tastes good, I'm going to eat it. So basically, my stance on this Chick-fil-A story, I don't know where you guys are, but I don't care what's in it. If it keeps tasting good, I'm just going to eat it. But that's just me. You eat at your own risk.
I will continue to eat Chick-fil-A.
Everything in moderation. And I mean, hey, if this flu had been allowed to continue to spread and kill off a bunch of animals, then we may have had no chicken at all, or like a huge chicken shortage. So I don't know. I guess weigh your options. Maybe get some animal antibiotics in your chicken, or no chicken at all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And look, if there was a massive chicken shortage, and man, I don't know what we could you imagine rolling up to Chick-fil-A and if they didn't have, you know what, no chicken sandwiches today.
I'm just saying, we're dealing with inflation, not a great economy. I think the last thing that the American spirit needs is a chicken shortage. So yeah,
I agree.
Give them the drugs if they need the drugs so that they can keep feeding us.
Yeah, that's where I stand. You can send all your hate mail to Trey. He'll happily take it. But
you can tweet me, because I no longer have Twitter.
You
have
so Twitter, there you go. Nevertheless, thank you for the Chick-fil-A update. We can all continue consuming our Chick-fil-A. At least we're aware of what we're eating now. So if you're concerned about that, well, now you can make your own choice. But that's where it is on Chick-fil-A. Appreciate you bringing that update there, Trey. And that's going to lead us over to the main thing now. And Pentecostal preacher Tony Suarez is on a mission to turn the conversation back to the spiritual down the border. Suarez is currently hosting Revival on the Border in El Paso, Texas, and McAllen, Texas, offering nightly revival meetings that will conclude on Good Friday. He joins Billy Hallowell to discuss his hope for heart change. That's today's main thing.
Revival on the border. This, obviously, the border is a huge issue. Everybody's been talking about it. It's going to be a big election issue, but it's a people issue. It's a gospel issue. Talk about revival on the border. What are you trying to do?
Well, it's exactly that. See, I'm 43 years old. The last time we had immigration reform, Ronald Reagan was the president, and I was in kindergarten. But it's an issue that every election cycle is used for campaign fodder. It doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat, they'll use this issue. And then once they're in office, they do absolutely nothing with the issue. Now, I've spoken about immigration reform and about the issues, along with Pastor Sam Rodriguez, who's my pastor in the NHCLC. We've been speaking to this issue for over 20 years. And every time it seemed like we were close, things would fall apart. And so what I'm contending for is that the answer to everything from border security to the human issue is Jesus Christ. And if Washington won't act, then the kingdom must act. And so that's why we're going to the border and here in just a few weeks from the time of this taping.
So you're going to be in El Paso, you're going to be in McAllen, Texas, and you're going to the border. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen during these events?
So I'd love to tell you that there was like this prophetic foresight and like the Lord showed me and I saw this map and the Lord said here and here. But really, those are the two cities that opened up to come to a tent revival. It just so happens that when you look at the map, it is the most extreme border on the southern border, east and west. So, you know, from right where Texas and New Mexico meet to right where Texas and Louisiana meet on the other side. So we'll start in El Paso. We're going to have 3 days of a tent revival there. And then we have what's called a prayer army. These are intercessors that are going to gather with us. We're going to pray over them and send them out from the tent in El Paso. They're going to drive the 1,254 miles of the southern border, because part of what we felt the Lord called us to do was to pray over the entire southern border. So they're going to go and pray, and then we're going to stop El Paso, Presidio, Eagle Pass, Laredo, McAllen, Brownsville, the 6 key points of entry into the United States. And we're going to have prayer rallies in those specific cities. So 2 tent revivals, 6 prayer rallies. My goal, and I've learned to not put a cap on the Lord, so I'm going to say it this way. I'm believing for at least 5,000 people to have an experience with the Lord, whether they're water baptized, filled in with the Spirit, give their life to God, healed, delivered, whatever it might be. And we're going to plant rocks. You know, the Old Testament, they would plant these stones of memorial. to remember a great victory or something they had done unto the Lord. We're going to plant these rocks in those six cities that say Revival on the Border as a memorial. We prayed here. And the second part of that was the book of Genesis chapter 2. The Lord essentially established an angelic border patrol around the Garden of Eden. He put cherubims at the corners and at the edges of the garden to protect the garden. Since they're the ministering spirits of the saints, I feel that we're to go pray and dispatch an angelic border patrol so that what's not happening legislatively, and by the way, it still has to happen, but until they get their act together, we're going to go to the one that can solve the problem. So we're going to eliminate donkeys and elephants and go right to the lion, the lamb, and the dove, and believe that this angelic army or angelic border patrol will serve as a protective covering for our border, but secondly, that they'll go into the desert and find those that have been deserted. My father was a church planter in Chicago, predominantly Hispanic church. We had more than one person that had crossed the border, talking the 70s, early 80s, and they were left to die in the desert. Women that were raped, children that were abused or tortured, and just left to die in the desert. But they testified that an angel of the Lord appeared, wings and all, and said, I've been sent by God, and would bring them water, would bring them food, would bring them to a bus and say, go to Chicago, go to this. And they would go and they would come to our church and say, I'm just here because, and as that sounds so far out nowadays, but that's our heritage. The angels of the Lord, these ministering spirits have done it for others. And so I'm praying that God would do it again for others that have been left to die in the desert. And now it's not just women, it's men as well. And I'm just believing that the hand of the Lord would help us. Our only motive is revival. I believe that revival is the answer. That great upswelling, that great move of God, not just in the church, but that revival that will start in the church house and then affect every house.
So obviously this sounds like an incredible event. You have this issue of the border, lots of opinions about it, lots of political opinions. And as Christians, you know, we sort of look at those opinions. People shouldn't be crossing illegally. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? Now people are in different cities and these cities are grappling with that. All of that aside, how are Christians, in light of the balance between justice and law and compassion and humanity and understanding what people are going through, how are we to process and understand and respond to this issue appropriately?
I think we always look at these issues through the lens of faith, whether it's immigration, abortion, any of the issues, the hotbed issues or hot take issues. We always come from a lens of compassion. Now, I'm a Hispanic, but before I'm Hispanic, I'm a Christian. I think they should shut the border down completely. And I have advocated for immigration reform. I have compassion for the issue. I've in the ministries that I've pastored, our congregations have been made up predominantly of undocumented immigrants. But right now the issue is it's like on steroids. That's the best adjective I can give. Yeah. For 15 years, I've been talking about approximately 15 million undocumented immigrants in the country. You're talking about like 30 million just in the last 4 years under this administration. It's out of control. This might not sound like the best analogy, but if my house was flooding, you can bring all the pails, all the buckets to get the water out. But until you find out where that water is entering the house, we're all working to no avail. So I want there to be compassionate, biblical, righteous immigration reform that respects the dignity of life, but also respects the rule of law. But we can't even get there until you shut that border down. Now, I don't know if that's for 4 days, 4 months. I don't think it's 4 years, but you got to get control of that issue. And I tell my Latino brothers, that's not the border issue of 10 years or 30 years ago, where this isn't just a Hispanic issue. There are legitimate terrorists crossing the border. I have spent considerable time at the border. I've ridden in boats down the Rio Grande with the Border Patrol. We were on the boat and the Mexican cartel is waving at us, calling our names out from their side of the beach. That's the kind of intel that they have. There is if Pastor Sam was here, and of course, he borrowed it from the Wizard of Oz, but he'd say, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. This issue is not what it used to be.
It's a national security issue, 100% is what you're saying.
100%. Right, and you have to shut that border down, the southern and the northern border. Shut them both down for a season. And because we don't just have a wall problem. That's the thing with this issue. It's just so big. Well, you know, we can go on these rabbit trails. It's not just a wall problem. You need to have a wall, but the door is broken. The entry exit system into the United States is broken.
All right, Billy, thanks for that conversation there. Really appreciate it. All right, that's going to leave us on this Tuesday edition of the Quick Start Podcast with time for one last thing.
Yeah, Hebrews 11:1 is a good encouraging and challenging reminder for us today. It says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see.
Yeah, it's a good reminder. I think it's easy to get kind of overwhelmed with the things that are here and now. But if we remember the promises of God, we don't always see the fulfillment of them in our lifetime, but we can rest assured that they're true, that they're going to come to pass in God's perfect time.
Amen. Great spot to leave it. On today's episode, as always, make sure you get on over to cbnnews.com if you haven't already today. Please go ahead and do that. Faithwire.com as well. For more news from a Christian perspective, Lord willing, and that creek don't rise on us. We'll be back here tomorrow with more of the same. God bless. Enjoy the rest of your day. See you tomorrow.